Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson, Baltimore. Baltimore positive. Happy summer week to you. Happy homestand to you. And it'll be a happy crab cake tour on Friday as the Yankees come to town. They will be in second place, at least for now. The Maryland Lottery giving us the Gold Rush Sevens doublers to give away. We've had some lucky ones. Had a $20 winner about 2 weeks ago. Cocos. We will be at Fadley's all afternoon on Friday. All hands on deck as the Yankees are in town. Our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions keeping the water crystal clear in my orange-colored glass. Make sure you're checking them out if you have a well or you have any plumbing needs at Liberty Pure Solutions, as well as Jiffy Lube Multi-Care, keeping us out on the road, driving us home, driving Luke to the ballpark, home from the ballpark. You and I asked a pretty poignant question. We did a lot of chatting on Monday about the Orioles and the trading deadline and All-Star game and the Yankees, but the pitching, and it was always the pitching. And you and I said, who do you trust? Who do you trust? I do not trust Dean Kramer. I think I mentioned that on Monday morning when we got going bright and early, and they took a day off. They went after Tuesday night. You know, what do they say? You're the weakest link or whatever it is. But if he were out there throwing the ball like Grayson Rodriguez, we wouldn't be so concerned about having to give up Mayo or Kerstad or Cal, whoever we're going to give up to get whatever pitching we're going to get. And by the way, I talked to all these Chicago people this week, the crochet things on their mind as well.
Yeah, well, and I think it. When you say you don't trust Dean Kramer, it's to do what? I mean, over the course of now 2.5 years, he's been about a league average starting pitcher, which is still valuable, mind you. You still need guys to fill out the back end of your rotation. So through that lens, I'm fine with Dean Kramer. But if you're asking me about Dean Kramer starting game three of a postseason series, then yeah, that's a completely different conversation. And people will bring up Texas last October, and that's fine. I mean, even last October, going into it, the Orioles were probably hoping John Means was going to start game three, and then his elbow started barking again. So I think it's just where they are right now. I don't think it's necessarily to be hasty in saying, oh, Dean Kramer's going to the bullpen or something like that. Now, I mean, he has to be better than he was on Tuesday night, clearly. But at the same time, he's someone who's been a league average starter over the course of the last 2.5 years. And that's still valuable when you're talking about your number four or especially your number five starter spot. But yeah,
league average on Tuesday night, it was not.
It was
your point. Yeah,
right. Right. Of course. And I think Tuesday night was a weird game too. I mean, it wasn't as though he got crushed. I mean, he gives up the two big home runs and obviously the half three run homer turned the game lopsided in the fourth. He's ahead 0-2. I even asked him about the pitch that he made. He has some success going low and away. He tries to come up and in with a cutter, didn't come up and in enough, and got the bat on the ball and hit it onto Utah Street. So
he misses spots, and when he misses spots, he pays, right? Period.
Yeah, and I think the difference between what we saw in Dean Kramer on Tuesday night compared to Seattle, stuff wasn't quite as lively, wasn't missing as many bats. And we've talked about this. Look, I know old school baseball fans will continue to say that, not continue, but will continue to maintain that strikeouts aren't everything. And they're not. I'm not saying they're everything, but they are really important. And it is a case of if you can't miss bats, boy, you can't miss your spots at all. When you have the ability to get swing and miss, sometimes you can be wild within the strike zone. I mean, Grayson Rodriguez is a great example of that. Corbin Burns, great example of that. Not saying that they're wild in the strike zone frequently, but they can get away with it much more because they have that swing and miss ability that they do. When you don't have as impressive stuff, then your margin for error is it's very small. I've talked about that a lot with Cade Povich, and I think that's been evident with him. For as much as he had the swing and miss stuff against Atlanta last month in his second major league start, that hasn't been there otherwise, and it's resulted in him having a much lower ceiling and a much smaller margin for error. So on Tuesday night, Dean Kramer didn't have as good of a fastball, didn't have as much swing and miss, and the Cubs made him pay for it. And also, I'll also point out a couple lapses defensively, and he had a couple walks and a hit by pitch, and you can't do those things. So it wasn't a ton of hard contact other than those two home runs, but those two home runs obviously cost him dearly and was a big reason why, one, he lasted only four innings, and two, the Orioles lost. Although I'll also point out didn't exactly mount much offense against Jameson Taillon and that Cubs bullpen.
Well, he's probably, as good as they get, right? He might be a guy that I said to my wife, watch this. It could be in our rotation in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Every time I have somebody on, I had a great conversation in Chicago, Rick Tellender, legendary columnist from Sports Illustrated in Chicago. And I also had on my old Sporting News radio executive producer. In both cases, I'm like, who are we fleecing? North side or south side? Who are we getting at this point? And I think that as this month goes on, as the All-Star break, and we'll have fun with Gunnar Henderson next week and who wins, who cares, all that kind of stuff. But there is some decorated part. And by the way, Jordan Westberg to the All-Star game. Let's talk about that for a minute. We'll come back to pitching because we did speak about snubbing and all that. And, I'm not convinced Kimbrel's not going to get there yet before it's all over with because of the way this thing subs out. But, it gave me pause to go back and look at his numbers. He might be having a better year than Rutschman. And I think highly of Rutschman.
Yeah, I mean, I would put Rutschman ahead of him.
He's a second baseman, to some degree, right?
Oh, sure. Well, second base / third base. I mean, either way. And that's what's been so valuable about him is he can play either of those spots. And
better than Floyd Rayford. I want to point that out.
Sure. I mean, he's been a plus defender at third. I don't think his defense has been quite as good at second base as it's been at third base, but it's been fine. It's not a problem, right?
And you mentioned Urias booting the ball the other night, too.
Sure. Well, and that's part of the point I was kind of alluding to early in the year when Urias wasn't hitting at all and Jackson Holliday struggles get sent back down. They got in a position where Westberg was playing plus defense and giving you plus offense at third base and Mateo was hitting. Now, since then, Mateo has really fallen off over the last month. And, Urias has been better with the bat than he was, say, in April and early May, but still not great. And even his defense, you hear them talk about him being a former Gold Glove defender at third base. He hasn't played like it this year, albeit not playing on an everyday basis and all that. But Westberg's versatility has just been so valuable. And when you have someone who can play multiple spots in the infield as a starter, and we're not talking about a utility guy. This is, super utility, if you want to call it that. But his bat's in the lineup every day because, he's been a 830, 840 OPS kind of hitter, hit for power, hit a home run on Tuesday night.
Well, at second base, he's Joe Morgan. At third base, he might be Scott Rowland. But either way, they have Jackson Holliday coming up. He's a third baseman, right? Like, as much as we'll talk about him next week as a swing guy, be like Bobby Gritch. You'll forget that he ever played the position at some point, right?
Well, and that's what's so interesting because you have Jackson Holliday who's going to play second. Kobe Mayo still playing primarily at third, although I still think Kobe Mayo, assuming he's in Baltimore, which I'm not at all convinced that the Orioles are going to trade him, unless it's for the right package. As I said, they're not paying Lamborghini prices for a minivan or, anything like that. I mean,
he feels untouchable unless we're getting like another Grayson Rodriguez.
I mean, I feel like someone like him, if suddenly the Tigers say Tarek Skubal's available, okay, I might be willing to part with Kobe Mayo then. It's a short list. I mean, the thing we need to remember, and I'll get back to Westberg in just a moment, but Jackson Holliday, Kobe Mayo, Samuel Basayo at AA Bowie, doing what he's doing as a catcher at Bowie at his age. These are really special prospects. They're all prospects, right? Prospects are suspects until they prove it at the major league level. But these are highly, really highly touted prospects. This isn't Chance Cisco six years ago or Hunter Harvey 8 years ago, right? I mean, these are premium kind of guys. So the point with that is if you're going to trade them, you better be getting premium in return. And that's why, going back to our conversation a couple of days ago, with Dean Kramer being in that mix, if you ask me right now who the Orioles are most likely to acquire as a starting pitcher, I'm guessing it's someone that's going to be closer to Dean Kramer's talent level than Kyle Bradish when he's healthy. So my point, and that doesn't mean that they're not going to get someone better than Kramer, but my point
is, you don't want to give up Kobe Mayo for league average.
Yeah, exactly. Or slightly above league average. Like Kobe Mayo.
Well, look at Jack Flaherty last year. We thought he could be as good as Dean Kramer. We thought he'd be better than Dean
better.
Kramer. That's why they brought him in.
Right, exactly, and it doesn't always work out that way. That doesn't mean you don't make trades, but it means you need to tread carefully. These are premium assets that could be really, really important to maybe even later this year. I mean, I'd still love to see Kobe Mayo's bat in this lineup in 2024. I think there's a place to do it. And that's why I've even talked about, you know, do you get creative? Is there a team out there that is going to buy and sell where, you know, there might be someone moved from the major league roster and suddenly that opens up an opportunity for a Kobe Mayo. But bringing it back to Jordan Westberg, because that's what you brought up. I mean, great to see him make it. I think he was very deserving of a spot. We talked about this the other day. Third base is crowded in the American League. I mean, you have Jose Ramirez, Rafael Devers, who ultimately is the one bowing out because he's been dealing with, I think, a sore left shoulder since April. So he's just going to rest. I mean, the Red Sox, don't look.
Here
too,
they come.
Don't,
here
yeah,
they come.
Don't look now. But, I mean, they're right on the Yankees' heels at this point. I'm still not convinced the Red Sox are going to be that team that's, you know, contesting for 100 wins, but they're certainly in the wild card mix. I mean, firmly in the wild card mix, and they can certainly make noise. And considering the Yankees have been the worst team in baseball over the last 3 weeks, record wise, the Red Sox are right in the rearview mirror for them, and the Orioles certainly can't sleep on them. But Devers bows out. We talked about it. Isak Paredes was the Rays' lone representative. So third base, it wasn't so much that there was warranted outrage for Westberg not to make it as a third baseman, but because of that versatility, you look at someone like Marcus Semien, who made it at second base, and you say, well, Westberg's having a better year than him. So good to see him make it. To your point, still would not be shocked if Craig Kimbrell winds up on that roster, but the Orioles now represented by four All-Star selections in Arlington next week. Great story. But I mean, Jordan Westberg, think about it. A year and a couple weeks past his major league debut. And he was solid last year, but it was unspectacular. It wasn't, oh my gosh, this kid is amazing. It was, he's holding his own. You know, he's solid. He's looking like a guy who's going to be a starter. But at this time last year, or even last September and October, if someone told you he was going to be an All-Star, you'd say, wow, man, he's taken a heck of a jump then in his first major league season, full major league season. And he's certainly done that. I mean, he's been as consistent as possible. And you could really tell, albeit after the 9-2 loss on Tuesday night, we had a chance to talk to him in the clubhouse. He's a quiet guy. He doesn't say a whole lot. You know, isn't necessarily going to entertain you in an interview, but he will offer some insight, and you could just tell he was really humbled by that experience. And I think he had, was he a snub? I mean, you know how I feel about that word being overused when it comes to All-Stars, but he was certainly deserving of going. So it was good to see him get that nod. And of all their All-Stars, even though it'll be Gunnar Henderson's first All-Star game as well, and Gunnar's going to get so much attention, we've known since probably late April that Gunnar Henderson was going to go to the All-Star game. I mean, he was just off to that kind of an unbelievable start on the heels of being Rookie of the Year. But with Jordan Westberg, the first half that he's had, the improvement he's made from his rookie year to his first full year in the major leagues, I mean, you said it right off the bat, in bringing him up. I still think it's Gunnar Henderson, Adley Rutschman, as far as 1-2, as far as the best position players on this team. But Jordan Westberg has been a very clear, obvious, no doubt about number three in terms of their best position players. And yeah, I think you can make, there's certainly some debate you could make. It probably a month ago, I would have put him ahead of Adley Rutschman. Now, if he's third, that's still speaking to how impressive he's been, how valuable he's been for this Orioles offense.
All right, with the Cubs in town and me talking about fleecing the Cubs and fleecing the White Sox and who are we going to take from them? Who are other teams going to take from them? Because they're going to deal with somebody. And I think that's the sort of the beauty of the system is that the Orioles are at the top. They have a lot of talent. But, you mentioned the Red Sox and other teams. Who will be willing to put together a package for Skubal or for Crochet or for whomever? And who's going to be able to deal from any level of Kobe Mayo, Basilio, wherever that depth is that the Tigers say, we want a catcher in the deal. Well, you're not getting Rutschman. All that being said, the Cubs, and talking to Cubs people and talking to Chicago people this week, I don't want to put you on the spot, but you're pretty savant about baseball. What year do they win the World Series?
They won in what, 2016?
16. I thought it was 17, by the way, if you would have asked me flat out, because I went to see Pearl Jam a couple times at Wrigley Field that summer, and Eddie Vedder, if you've seen the film, they wrote the Cubs song that year, all that, but it was 16, so it was 8 years ago. I get this mixed up with the Capitals too, because the Capitals were 17, right? So like I'm trying to year after year, and the Nationals were 19 going into the strike. So I get years, especially with the NBA and the NHL, but they're sort of interchangeable for me. When the Cubs won in 16, and you and I were a decade into our relationship, you and I have been at this a long time. We sat here and talked about those World Series games as they happened, those players. The Orioles were sort of at the end at that point by the time they had won. You would have thought the Cubs would have had another crack, right? Or a couple of cracks. They came in, and it would have been like the Orioles winning this year. They're all young enough that you think, all right, we're going to have more chances of this. And on the backside of Kansas City, when Kansas City won 15, 14, 15, they were in the World Series. San Francisco was in and out all those years. You looked at Moustakas, you looked at Hosmer, you looked at all those guys, said, oh, they're close to their number. And who are we going to sign? Are we going to give Hosmer the money? Who's the guy we're going to keep? Who's our Gunnar Henderson that's going to be our franchise player? And Peter picked Chris Davis here. So, and let Machado go away. So, as far as bad decisions, it is what it is. The Cubs never won again. And as I talk to these people in Chicago, and the Cubs are, uh-oh, duh-duh, back to being the Cubs again, back to being last place, back to Lee Elia, back to we don't have the kind of prospects, and Theo doesn't want to come, and Joe Maddon's not here, we don't have geniuses, and we don't have, big three at the top of our rotation anymore. It's really painted for me how fleeting all this can be. Especially when you're competing with the Red Sox and the Yankees in our division, who are always going to have resources to steal your best player if you let them, because they can afford it. And the Cubs window being so short is telling, threatening, frightening, worrisome for this trading deadline and your philosophy of we've got a long bench and a long runway of all these young players. And if we give too much away, we won't have that runway 2 or 3 years from now, and we'll be a diminished franchise on the face of it if you take three of these prospects away. You take Basilio away, take away Mayo, take away, I don't know, Kerstedt, Cowles, pick anybody you want. They're all darts at this point, right? Cowles would look like he was going to the Hall of Fame. Now it looks like, he might be Joe Charbonneau for all we know, right? Like, who knows? The Cubs window and how good that franchise was and where it came on and the geniuses associated with that, they won once. It was fun. They all got drunk. They're still hungover. Harry Carey came back to life and got drunk and still hungover. I'm just saying it happens very, very quickly. And that's my warning for the Orioles is saying, because I bring up Kansas City all the time. They won. They went back in the hole. I don't know how this is going to go. And I know you deep down, you don't talk much about the owner because you still have a credential. Let me do all that talking. But I think the concern is this guy's not long term. This guy hasn't even held a press conference. This guy's not even going to live here. This guy's trying to win here and now. He's 74 years old. He's running around like Tom Benson with an umbrella, throwing out hats, telling the son how much fun he's having and all that. Might be more fun than sitting on Squawk Box last week being asked who he's picking for president, which he declined. So I would just say the here and now of this owner, their money, this team, the prospects, the value of the prospects, and Elias knows better than anybody. And Elias knows better than anybody whether he's going to be here 3 years from now or not, and whether this is a long-term situation for him or whether he's like, hey, dude, I get Corbin Burns right now. I got three guys getting cut off, four guys getting cut on. Throw Batista in there. Like, we got to win now. We got to win now. The real urgency. So I put that to you. I gave you both sides. I gave you, point counterpoint. Win now. Oh, no. We got a long runway. We can't give these guys up because 2, 3 years from now, we're going to want another shot. We're going to want another chance at this, not we're all in right now. And there's all sorts of schools of thought for, all of these teams that think they're going to win the World Series. And to your point, it winds up being Texas and Arizona that nobody on July 10th of last year would have given a bag of donuts to.
Yeah, and I'm glad you made that last point because look, You can say you're all in all you want. You can go make six trades at the trade deadline. They don't give you the World Series trophy on August 1st after you do that. I mean, they don't. That doesn't mean you don't make trades. That doesn't mean you don't seek out opportunities. I fully expect them to add a starting pitcher. I fully expect them to add some bullpen help. Do I think that we're going to be sitting here on August 5th, a week after that, all that dust settles, and I'm going to tell you that I guarantee you they're going to win the World Series? I'm not going to say that. Because that's not how this works. Now, I'll say this. Again, there's a wide range here. You can say you're not going to trade Jackson Holliday, Kobe Mayo, Samuel Basayo. And by the way, you still have a ton of prospects you can deal. They have a lot of other guys. We've seen guys, Connor Norby, to your point, Colton Cowser would be in that conversation. Heston Kerstad would be in that conversation. When I say that, that doesn't mean they're moving all of them. The point is they have a wide net. Of guys that range from generational prospect like Jackson Holliday on the way down to all the way down to Connor Norby or guys that are at some lower levels that aren't necessarily in the daily discourse of fans talking about the system, but they have guys throughout their system that are highly regarded. I mean, you go to the Orioles top 30 prospect list on MLB.com and you see those guys that are ranked 8 through 20. I mean, those are guys that would be premier guys in other team systems, right? I mean, those would be guys that other teams would covet and say, hey.
All we can hope is he gives up some guy we've never heard of, right?
Yeah, and look, there's probably going to be some of those guys mixed in. But, the counter to what you said about the Cubs, I would also say, well, the Cubs made the playoffs 5 out of 6 years. You know, they gave themselves a six-year window where they were highly competitive, right? I mean, they won –
well, the 90s. Nationals could have been in 3 World Series, and they got in the one, and they won, right? Like,
sure,
they were
sure.
Good. That is the window, right? The Orioles could have gone to the World Series last year.
Yeah, look, again, you can't trade your way into a World Series. And what I mean by that is you could do all these – make all these deals and have the Ken Rosenthals and the Jeff Passons of the world on August 1st praising you for all that you did. And you could still lose a short series in the divisional round. I mean, that's just
you're
how
just trying
works.
To trade yourself into a good game 3 starter. That's really what you're trying to do.
Sure. And that's why but I've also talked a lot about the bullpen and saying, look, I love Corbin Burns. I love Grayson Rodriguez. I'll take that 1-2 punch going up against just about anyone in baseball. You know, I think that's really compelling. Game 3 obviously is another story. But there are other teams in baseball, other contenders in baseball where they're not going to feel as good about their game 3 and game 4 starters. I mean, that's how this works. And I'll say, and this is why I'll come back to the bullpen, how many of those game 3 and 4 starters, even on rotations that you feel are deeper than the Orioles, how many of those guys are going to be guys that navigate a lineup in a postseason game 3 times? You're talking about a short list of starting pitchers in this day and age who are going to do that. So my point is,
you want a guy for the sixth inning, right?
You better have 4 guys in your bullpen that you feel really strongly about, that you have conviction about, where you can use them in just about any spot. And yeah, you're going to have your closer. Yeah, you're going to have your primary eighth inning guy, whoever that's going to be for the Orioles, because the eighth inning right now, who knows? Is it Jacob Webb? Is it Yennier Cano? I mean, it kind of depends. Certainly not the same conviction that you had last year. At this time for Yennier Cano, although, you know, it feels like he's starting to bounce back a little bit again after some struggles. But
I'll inject my Joe Flacco and to say they win a lot of games around here. They don't lose a lot of games because of Yennier Cano. Yeah.
Well, and again, this kind of goes back to the big picture. The 30,000 foot look all along has been how fans and even media have perceived this team. You know, Kyle Bradish made 8 starts, 9 starts. John Means made 4 starts. Tyler Wells made 3 starts. I mean, this team's gone to this point, not because of what those guys have done. It's been because of obviously Burns and Rodriguez a lot. But the point is, other guys have stepped up and pitched well. They've had a higher floor than anyone would have thought when it comes to both their rotation and their bullpen. But that said, you need ceiling for October. You need shut down elite kind of arms coming out of the back end of that bullpen. And that's why I've said, yeah, a number 3 starter is great. I'm not disagreeing with that. But at the same time, you know, let's not get caught up in romanticizing Jack Morris of 35 years ago, understanding that those performances you don't see in October anymore. I mean, it's rare. I mean, even the best of the best are maybe going 7 innings in a postseason game. So you need bullpen arms. So that's why I'll continue to bang the table as that being an even bigger priority for me than number three starter, number four starter in the postseason, which, again, yes, upgrade, yes, stabilize, yes, you want to certainly fortify this rotation. For one, you don't know if someone's going to tweak a hamstring trying to cover first base or something like that. I mean, there's no guarantee that you're out of the woods in terms of health concerns. So you certainly want to fortify, but they've got work to do.
Depth of pitching is an issue here. Depth of pitching, just in a general sense, if you're saying what their issue is in a sentence, depth of pitching.
Here's the problem. Depth of pitching is an issue everywhere. So the point is now other contenders, and then you get into the wild card race where, I mean, you even mentioned the Cubs. And look, I don't think the Cubs are going to be buyers. Don't get me wrong. But the Cubs are 4.5 games out of the last wild card spot. I mean, that just speaks to how muddy the waters are in terms of, okay, who exactly is buying? Who exactly is selling? That's where I think I'll continue to come back to this. And some people will listen to this and think I'm crazy. I still think there's a potential for a deal that involves some major league talent. And it might be the Orioles deal someone from their roster in addition to some prospects to go get some pitching. And I don't know, that might open up everyday playing time for a Coby Mayo. Or at that point, you're saying, okay, Jackson Holliday's coming back. And, they're not that there wouldn't be at-bats for him right now, but the point is there are a lot of different ways this can go. I've seen numerous reports and lots of speculation about someone like Tampa Bay, who I'm not a believer in the Rays whatsoever, but, they're still kind of sort of not out of the wild card race. We've seen some teams the last couple of years even be buyers and sellers, where they might sell off a couple of veteran players, but they might go add something else. So I just think with the Orioles, with all the assets that they have, and again, ownership and payroll expectations and all that being the wild card here, there's a lot of possibilities for as far as what the Orioles could do. And that's where I look at the big picture and come back to what we talked about originally, which was the premium of the premium prospects. And I look at someone like Coby Mayo and say, okay, yeah, he would be an amazing piece to trade for an elite pitcher that may or may not be available out there. But at the same time, I look at some of the guys that have been in Baltimore for 4 or 5 years now, like a Ryan Mountcastle, for example. And I think we know what Mountcastle is at this point. He's up and down. When he's hot, you love him. When he's not hot, he's batting seventh in your order, as we saw the other night. So that's not a knock on him, but he's also, he's got what, 2 more years of club control? Do you really want to be in a position where you're trading Coby Mayo when he could be your first baseman of the future? And look, he could be your first baseman of the very near future. So I'm not saying that as jumping on the table saying you must trade Ryan Mountcastle today either. But the point is, there are a lot of different combinations, a lot of different possibilities to go out and make trades. That's why, even if you say we're not trading Holliday, we're not trading Bisaya, we're not trading Mayo, that's fine. You still have a dozen other guys in your system that I think would still be very appealing in the right combination of, in a trade package. So,
and you mentioned Tampa. Like, a lot of people say, well, in division, they'll be, if they love Connor Norby and they love a player and they're going to get that player out of that, I think that's going away a little bit.
It should. I've said this over and over. We've talked about this a lot, even talking about football, where, look, if you have a trade partner in the division, don't get me wrong, I'll view that as the tiebreaker for not wanting to make a deal. But if one of your division rivals is offering up the best deal, shame on you if you're not going to take it, right?
Queen had no problem taking the Steelers' money.
Exactly. Well, sure. I mean, that wasn't exactly what I was going for. But the point,
there's a thought, would the Ravens have traded him to the Steelers? They probably would have tried to trade him elsewhere in the same way Roquan Smith didn't get traded to the Packers.
Sure. But at the same time, if you have a trade possibility and the Steelers offer up the best deal, then I don't think you should take an inferior deal just because of that. So, there's nuance with that. I'll tell you the team that I think is way more interesting in terms of in the division. What about the Toronto Blue Jays? Look at some of those pitchers who, I get it, they're not all having great years, but there's some guys that in recent history have pitched really, really well. And, that's a team that I don't think is tearing it down entirely and going into a full rebuild, but they certainly need to do some retooling. So
I think
well, their
I
stars didn't
an
make it,
interesting
right?
team.
I mean, you know, their stars haven't been what Rutschman and Henderson have been.
Yeah, but at the same time, look at someone who pitched on Tuesday night. Now they lost out in San Francisco Tuesday, but Kikuchi, left-handed, he went 7 1/3 innings, struck out 13. I mean, missed bats. His season ERA is 4. It's not tremendous, but if you're looking for upside, if you're looking for someone to get on a roll, if you're looking for someone who has a track record, is there a deal to be made for someone like him, even within the division? So, look. We could talk about 15 different teams right now the Orioles could potentially trade with, but it's still complicated because you have so many of these teams where you just keep saying, are they buyers or sellers? I mean, the Rangers, who even I had left for dead, probably talking about them 2 or 3 days ago, they've won 5 in a row. They're still 44 and 48. They're still way back for a wild card spot. I still think they probably wise to, at this point, they're probably wise to be sellers. Especially with some of the expiring contracts they have and some of the veteran players they have. So, but they keep winning. And we've talked about Seattle coming back to earth and not being able to swing the bats. I mean, they might say, hey, we're not giving up on this yet. So point is, we still have what? Just under 3 weeks to go until the trade deadline. Mike Elias is working the phones. They've been working the phones. They've been talking to teams.
Well, it's an important couple weeks of baseball, too, in general sense for who wins and who loses the next week. I mean, Cubs lose a couple of games here and they win Tuesday night, but if they lost some games, they'd be much more capable of being a trading partner. So watching baseball the next 2 or 3 weeks, you'll get a vibe for who's in and who's out.
Yeah. I mean, weren't the Angels the prime example of that last July? I mean, think about it. Everyone was talking about, oh, okay, well, Ohtani is going to be a free agent. You got to trade him. And they say, no, we're not trading Shohei Ohtani. In fact, we're going to make a run at this. And they went out and made moves. It was a disaster. I mean, they completely fell apart and they ended up losing Ohtani anyway. And what few assets they had in their system, they had traded away. So, you're going to have teams that do smart things. You're going to have teams that do dumb things. You're going to have teams that buy when they should sell.
Well, you also have general managers and managers who have to win, or veteran players,
sure.
or teams with players on contracts and saying, we're more all in right now. I mean, the Red Sox fans are beating on them about, like, not quitting and staying in. And there's pressure in a lot of those places. I wouldn't think Texas is one of those places because they've won. Houston had such an awful start, and now they're in it. They're just in it. Kansas City's in it for the first time in a long time, right? So you got and teams like Milwaukee, who dealt their number one, dealt their Cy Young winner, and they're still winning the division.
Yeah, and I mean, then you have a team like the Orioles 2 years ago, who in July, they were in wild card contention. Even if you didn't believe they were going to do it, mathematically, they were absolutely in the mix. And what do? They traded Trey Mancini, which was not unexpected, but was unpopular at the time. And they traded Jorge Lopez, who even guys like me who fancy ourselves for thinking that we're a little smart about baseball, we're kind of wondering about it. Well, 2 years later, Trey Mancini is out of baseball. I mean, think about that, out of baseball. And Jorge Lopez, last time we saw him, was melting down with the Mets and was an absolute fiasco. So not to say that the Orioles have an abundance of players from those two trades that are helping them immediately, but Yennier Cano has helped them and helped them a lot over the last calendar year. And, we'll see about Cade Povich. We'll see about Chase McDermott, who very much could be in the mix, at least as a bullpen option for them, maybe later in the season. So, you make those trades at that point in time and was unpopular at that point in time. In fact, if you remember, Mike Elias flew down to, I think it was Arlington, at the trade deadline to kind of talk to the team and say, hey, this is what's happening here, guys. Don't think that this is just much of the same. We made a couple deals here, a couple difficult decisions here that might hurt us a little bit right now, but we think we're going to be in a really, really good spot in the very near future. And lo and behold, Mike Elias was right at that point in time. Those trades were the right moves at those points.
Oh, those trades were never look backs. Like,
yeah,
literally.
But at the time, it didn't feel that way, though, right? At the time, it felt like, man, these guys have finally turned the corner, and you're trading Trey Mancini, and you're trading Jorge Lopez, who even has some more club control. And look, those ended up being the right decisions. So, you're always balancing the here and now with the big picture. And again, I want to see the Orioles make some moves. I think they're going to make some moves. I fully expect them to make some moves. At the same time, I think we should know by now, 5-6 years into the Mike Elias era, he's not going to burn down the farm system just to try to, what would amount to incrementally, marginally try to improve your chances to win in October this year. There's always a balance of right now with the big picture. And look, they're going to add a starting pitcher. They're going to add some bullpen arms. But to your point that you made 5 minutes ago, you know, Jack Flaherty at that point in time, you know, they were hoping that that was going to be an upgrade
better than
for
that.
Yeah. You hope you do better than that. At the same time, the other thing, and you talked about this the other day, just the risk in general, you can go out and acquire some starter that you feel great about. And then guess what happens? Three starts into it, his elbow's sore. I mean, there's so much unpredictability here. There is so much variance. There is so much unknown, and that you can't let that paralyze you to the point where you don't make any moves. But at the same time, I'll continue to say, if we're talking about the Orioles still playing baseball on October 24th, I'm guessing it's going to be a heck of a lot more about Corbin Burnes, Grayson Rodriguez, Gunnar Henderson, Adley Rutschman, Jordan Westberg, than players A, B, and C they acquire at the trade deadline. And that's a Captain Obvious statement when you're talking about all-stars and above average talent that I just rattled off there. But look, who's healthy, who gets hot at the right time? Texas, you said it, Texas and Arizona at this time last year, you know, maybe the Rangers to a lesser extent, because the Rangers, they played good baseball, but especially Arizona, no one was talking about them making an October run at this time last year. And you see what happens. So, you know, there's still way more luck, way more variance involved in all this than any of us care to admit. That's why, first and foremost, you just want to get in. And anything else you want to say about the Orioles pitching and all that, that's fine. But they're going to be in the playoffs. So at the very least, they have that going for them. And that's why I said, view this trade deadline not as something that's great angst or great concern. It's a great opportunity, because this is already a heck of a baseball team, and they have an opportunity here to make it even better. And that's what's exciting.
Luke Jones will be at the ballpark tonight. He'll be there this weekend. The Yankees in town. We'll be together on Friday at Fadley's at the new Lexington Market. I'll have the Gold Rush Sevens doublers to give away from the Maryland Lottery. Our friends at Jiffy Lube and Liberty Pure Solutions putting us out on the road. The Oyster Tour is coming together in my mind. Football season's coming together in Luke's mind, but he's on vacation next week, and we have an all-star game coming up. Lots and lots of cool stuff going on at BaltimorePositive.com, as well as in our social media space. I am Nestor. He is Luke. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.